Dr. Westbrook.
Dr. Baffa.
Hello and welcome, everyone, after a short hiatus to the Two Doctors podcast, where we talk about all things weightlifting related and some things weightlifting unrelated. I'm Dr. David Baffa, and joined by the one and only Dr. Jonas Westbrook. Dr. Westbrook, how are you this evening?
I'm doing just fine. Settled up here in New Hampshire, finally.
Yes. This is maybe the first podcast where you're in the new place, perhaps.
We may have done one, actually, early on, I think in January, February. But we've had a bit of a hiatus.
We have, and we have very short memories, too. Mm-hmm. And so it's entirely possible that you're correct.
Yes. Now, you're still in Beloit. Is that correct?
I am still in Beloit at the moment. So no improvement on my front. But it's good to know that one of us is edging closer to civilization.
A little south, too. And believe it or not, there is a little improvement in weather and climate.
Really?
Yeah. I'd say between probably 8 and 10 degrees. And yeah, you get a little extra, probably an extra week on each end for the change of seasons.
Not bad, Dr. Westbrook. Not bad. Now, how is the lifting in New Hampshire where you are?
Well, it's mostly CrossFit that I'm sort of running into at this point.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, Risto's place is right over the water into Elliott, Maine, which is probably only about 30 or 40 minutes from here. But, you know, I've just never got a great feeling about training there.
Fair enough, Dr. Westbrook.
So right now I've got a garage and a CrossFit that I visit once a week.
And how is training?
Training is poor, to put it really, really honestly. Yeah, it's quite poor.
But, well, that makes two of us, Dr. Westbrook.
But you know, what would you expect from a training a day or two a week?
Yeah, well, you know, you put it on hiatus for the moment. And at this point, you start thinking of 2020. At this point, it's all Absolutely. About the next quad, Tokyo, and, you know, missing out on Tokyo as well. We've already missed out on Rio. Now we got to start thinking about missing out on Tokyo.
Yeah. You know, speaking of thinking ahead to Tokyo, I read this very interesting little article that was an interview with Liu Zhaojun. Did you see this by any chance on the IWF website?
I saw the link. I have not yet had a chance to click on it. Tell, Dr. Westbrook.
Well, one of the most interesting pieces was he was asked something along the lines of, you know, what are your thoughts about 2020 and obviously 2016 Olympics too, but also 2020, and his response was something along the lines of, well, if there's nobody who's really competitive at my weights, I'll continue to train and hold off on retiring. Which makes one think that if there was somebody who could even touch him, that he would retire, which I thought was a little strange sort of justification for an early retirement.
Well, it wouldn't actually be an early retirement, would it?
True.
Mr. Zhaojun is already getting up there in weightlifting years.
Yeah.
And per somebody like Pyrrhos Dimas, he is a grandfather at the age of 31. Dimas, I believe, pinned it at 30.
Yeah.
So in Tokyo, he'd be 35?
Yeah, I think he'd be 35. But I mean, what's amazing about him is, you know, I'm sure you recently saw the videos, but he broke his own total world record at the Chinese National, or excuse me, at the, was it the Asian Games or the Chinese?
It was at the Chinese National. World record, but yeah, 381 total, and that would have been a world record. And he still snatched 174, and he clean and jerked. What, 207, I believe, which That's is a personal best for him, I think.
Yeah, and he passed on his third snatch attempt.
Yeah, I mean, once you get 174 overhead, where are you really going to go?
Right.
Saved himself for the clean and jerk, I suppose.
He truly is a god among men.
He was 31 years old and doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's on his way to 32, so his birthday is 1984, so really per IWF, age standards, he's 32 right now.
Holy smokes. That's amazing. He is less than a year younger than I am, which makes me feel absolutely pathetic in every way possible.
I think it's unfair to compare mere mortals with somebody strung together from whatever Liu Zhaoxin is made of.
Yes, yeah.
It's really, even at the top level, it's unfair to compare a lot of people with him. But we did see some solid lifting out of the Europeans recently in the 77s.
We did a 170 snatch. You know, his name escapes me at the moment, but he was a junior lifter also. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we'll wait to see if any of the labs come back with something to say about that. But yeah, Andranik Karapatian, 77, out of Armenia. Mm-hmm. A 170 snatch. I mean, that even Gregor noted, of all things Jim, quote, "It's not often that you see a non-Chinese 77 snatch these weights."
Very true. It's very true. I mean, the first person I think of is another Armenian, Tigran Motarasyan.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's really the only other person who comes to mind who's non-Chinese that's snatched that kind of weight as a 77 recently.
Yeah, in recent memory. I mean, but there are other lifters, of course, in the past. Sergei Filimonov out of Kazakhstan had that record, I believe, for a little while. But yeah, it is 170 for a 77 is really getting into rare territory.
I think he had that record for a short while.
Yeah. Now we're getting a little off topic, but talking about 77 snatches, I really, and Liu Zhaoxin, we could wax poetic the entire evening, but the focus of the evening in this little podcast to tide us over to another one where we'll talk about the upcoming nationals. But today, right now, we should talk about our recent trip to Greece to hang out with one and only Piros Dimas. And also, perhaps we should start by mentioning some unfortunate news, the passing of one of the greatest weightlifters of all time, the great Tommy Kono.
Yeah, he was a guy who, you know, I shook his hand once, but never really knew him, but was still like fairly active in the sport at a very late age in his life. And what a legend he was. I mean, I think he was a 3-time Olympian. I want to say, 2-time gold and a silver medalist at the 1960 Summer Olympics, and was a 6-time consecutive world weightlifting champion. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I believe at one point he was considered the lifter of the century or something along those lines. I forget the exact name or title he was given, but I mean, just really a very, very well decorated, from what I understand, a really nice guy too, and an enthusiast for the sport.
Yeah. He was on the USAW board of directors until, I want to say, 2011 or 2012, for a period that I was on. And then he stepped down from the board. But yeah, until very late in life, he was still active in the sport. And my first encounter with him in person was at the Arnold. I forget what year, but it was, you know, perhaps 2005, 2006. And Tommy Kono was giving a demonstration of lifting and technique. And so again, you know, older gentleman already at that point in his 70s, but still giving back to the sport and still active in the sport and still very interested in seeing U.S. lifters do well.
Yeah, another interesting little tidbit about Tommy Kono is that he was also a successful bodybuilder. And again, this is, you know, give credit to Wikipedia here, but he won the Ironman Mr. World title in 1954, which is the same year that he was also world champion, one of 6 years that he was world champion. So very competitive in all the different strength competitions that were available to him at the time.
Yeah, he really was a multi-strength sport athlete. And as you noted, bodybuilding, interesting history as well, because he spent time in an internment camp during World War II when they were putting Japanese Americans in internment camps. And I remember him and Artie talking about his history, and Artie Dresser was a real admirer of Tommy Kono and the fact that he overcame difficulties like that, difficulties like kind of not great health when he was younger, and he already liked to hold up Tommy as an example of how anybody, whatever their status, whatever their situation, their physical condition, could become successful in the sport.
Absolutely. And if my memory serves me correctly, he was a guy who really perfected the squat snatcher, one of the first who really drew a lot of attention for squat snatching super heavy weights. Prior to his time, there were still some squat snatchers, but it was predominantly the split snatching technique that was used on the world stage. So pretty cool to see somebody really sort of change the paradigm of the way to do the snatch, at such an early time in the history of weightlifting.
You know, this is from Bruce Clemens' page, Bruce Clemens Classic Weightlifting Photography on Facebook, which if you're not following him or friends with him already, I strongly suggest you check him out. Mm-hmm. Bruce Clemens has been going to weightlifting meets for decades now, photographing them. And today he posted a little bit about his friendship with Tommy Kono and getting to know the man later in life. And he has a nice little anecdote about Tommy saying basically, when he was training in his parents' basement, he could normally lift, a certain amount of weight. He said, I could lift X. But then when his brother came down to watch, he could lift X plus Y. And then if his brother brought friends, he could lift X plus 2 times Y. And then when he was in the YMCA, in Sacramento YMCA, he could lift X plus 3 times Y. And then when he was competing in local meets, it was X plus 4 times Y and X plus 5 times Y in national meets. And at the Worlds, X plus 6 times Y and more and so on.
Wow.
And so apparently he was a real clutch lifter, somebody who could perform under pressure. And I guess who did much more in competitions than he would do in training.
That's great. I mean, I just love lifters like that, too, who really bring it for the big meets and can turn it on when they need to. Obviously with the kind of, records he's set, I mean, he's got 26 world records and 7 Olympic records that he set throughout his career.
And the world records across 4 body weight classes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've discussed that a little bit, like when the idea of really showing dominance within a sport that has different weight classes, if you can jump from one to the other and still dominate, that really creates that sort of legendary status. Yeah. And someone that I think of in recent years or really is an active lifter now is Ilya Ilyin, who of course is jumped from 85s to 94s and now is pretty solid as a 105 and really just dominating as he moves.
He's solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is solid right now.
Yep.
There's a photo going around the interwebs recently where it shows Ilyin's physical progression, kind of a skinny young guy until more recently. And the final picture is just a refrigerator holding a weight overhead.
And interestingly enough, he seems to gain more hair as he gets older, which is quite opposite the traditional way of hair development or loss. But hey, it works.
It is working for him. Ilyin, we love the hair.
Love the hair, yeah.
So, but very sad news to hear Tommy Kono's passing, but somebody who will be remembered in the sport and lots of people paying tribute to him today online and a couple news outlets as well. So if you don't know Tommy Kono, if you don't know who he is or are curious, I would definitely recommend checking him out. Quick Google search. Lift Up, I think, probably has some information. And Bruce Clemens, like I said, is also put up some images of Tommy Kono today.
Now, Dr. Baffa, let's discuss Thessaloniki.
Thessaloniki, which it's a bit inaccurate to say we were in Thessaloniki.
True.
We flew into Thessaloniki.
Yes.
Greece.
Unexpecting, or really not expecting to meet Dimas, not expecting really anything more than just a few days to hang out with the two doctors.
I figured it was just going to Greece for a vacation.
But in fact, there were people to pick us up. There was a place to stay that had just been renovated.
Yeah.
There, in fact, was Pyrrhos Dimas available for interview, available for discussion, available for you know, having a few beers together, which was really fantastic.
Late into the evening, early into the morning, yes, perhaps more accurately.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, my expectations were low for the trip, and if you could put that into a bottle, what my expectations were, I mean, you're talking about exploding that bottle for the reality of what happened.
Yeah. I mean, for a little context, it's worth noting that Debbie Millett, who is organizing the Nationals and the Trials this year, she is responsible for setting this up, and we have tremendous faith in her. But when somebody promises you things like Pyrrhos Dimas and transportation and meals, you know, I get a little, not to say the two doctors aren't celebrities worthy of such treatment, and not to say we don't receive that everywhere we go, but you don't know how far that kind of currency travels. Is it going to work in Greece?
Right.
And I have to say, to the credit of Debbie and to the great credit also of the Mount Athos Area Tourist Organization and all the people associated with them, with the town of Arnaia, with the people who helped us out with Dimas in terms of translating. I mean, this was really a knockout trip. As you said, expectations not even met. I mean, exceeded in every single dimension possible.
That's right. That's right. The sort of strangeness of it all, because really this was sort of something that was put together, I wouldn't say last minute, but yeah, it was sort of, you know, just thrown together pretty quickly. And of course, by the strategic planning of Debbie Millett, really just, it came together. It came together.
Oh, yeah.
And there was one point when you and I were driving, or not driving, but being driven from the airport, where we thought we were being driven to our deaths or perhaps some sort of camp.
It was about 11:30 at night in the middle of what felt like the middle of nowhere, an hour or so inland from Thessaloniki. In the wilderness, you might say.
Yeah, yeah. Quite literally in the wilderness. I mean, as we're turning, of course, you can't see anything besides what the small little headlights of this little Mercedes van was illuminating for us. So it was quite scary, because there's we just didn't know where we were going to end up. But it turns out we ended up in this really pretty cool little town, and of course in a very nice little hotel too.
Yeah. Very nice hotel, the town of Arnaia, which is small, but very nice little town. We ate quite well there, and got to see the surrounding countryside, which is where the birthplace of Aristotle is. And you can follow his the Aristotelian walk, I believe, or hike, 30-some-odd kilometers, which we, of course, did not do. But we did a few hundred meters before we tired out, I would say.
Dimas has done that.
Has he really done the whole thing?
He told me he did the whole thing, yeah.
30-some-odd kilometers. He's in great shape still.
Yeah, he's in good shape. I mean, there's where to get started, but, you know, he's what is he now? You know, in his probably mid-40s or so. You know, he just threw out some weights and numbers that he was still sort of recently moving around, and just makes you feel a little pathetic.
yeah, it's really not good for the ego. But the guy is a four-time Olympian, three-time Olympic champion, won bronze, four-time Olympic medalist. Really, we should say.
And this is a guy who is really built for this sport. And it's always a question of when you have somebody who's been training since they were a child, and he started very young, you know,
seven and a half years old.
Yeah, exactly. Pre-double digit years. You know, is it that your body naturally is forming and it just ends up working out well for weightlifting, or does weightlifting sort of change the development in such a way to make it more advantageous for you to be good at weightlifting?
You know, I think it's probably a combination.
Yeah.
I want to say it's been demonstrated that kind of repeated stress on the body will influence bone development, bone growth, things like that, make them able to support those kinds of weights. But it probably also helped that he was built for weightlifting in some capacity, at least.
Yeah, there's a famous what we call Panorex radiograph, which is a one of those X-rays that wraps around your head that kind of shows you the full structure of the jaw and the bones and things of the skull. But there's this great picture of this Panorex that shows a very, very famous violinist who the side that she held her violin on was completely deformed in such a way that her violin fit perfectly in the jawline. So, really? You know, that's just an example of how your body does sort of grow into whatever it is that you're sort of aspiring to, especially putting a lot of time and effort into that sport.
I would say he grew into holding a barbell.
Yeah, he grew quite well into holding a barbell.
Yeah. So we had two full days with him, where we were with him essentially all day, both days, and well into the evening on the first night. The second day, he had to fly back. Dr. Westbrook, this is a hard question, but what stands out from the 2 days that we spent with Dimas? And we should note, too, that we were filming, interviewing him. We got lots and lots of hours of footage. I mean, the first day of interviews was at least 4 or 5 hours, I want to say. And the second day, we were hanging out probably about that much time, fewer times straightforward interviews, but lots of time still filming. So what stands out to you?
Wow, that's a big, big question. I think what stands out most to me about the whole sort of development of Dimas is the fact that throughout his great success throughout the sport, he's become not only an advocate for the sport, but really an advocate for the people and for children, and really has this idea of sport coinciding really well with the development of children and young adults into really great people, and there's no one better to exemplify that than Dimas. I mean, through our experience together, he is one of the most genuine, kind people that I've met. And really, when you have an athlete at that level, you can really go either way, because obviously any athlete who's won numerous gold medals at the Olympics, who's set world records in any sport, you have to have a certain amount of confidence. But that very, very often trickles over into arrogance.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that has never happened with. And he's a confident person, but he is by no means arrogant. And every single time there's a fellow Greek citizen or child who might recognize him, he takes however many minutes out of his day to sign autographs, to take photos, to shake hands with people. He never, ever turned someone away. And that really, really stuck out with me.
Yeah, that was remarkable to see. I think it was most impressive after that first day of interviewing, because you never know. Like you said, lots of athletes, little success. Lots of athletes with no success have horrible egos and really think a bit more of themselves than is probably warranted. But yeah. So even when Dimas arrives, you don't know what kind of guy he's going to be. I mean, I'd heard that he was a good guy, but you don't know what that's going to translate to in hours of interviewing. Mm-hmm. You know, that first day we do, like I said, 4 or 5 hours of filming. We hadn't eaten all day. There was like a little snack break in the middle of it. And then when we were at that restaurant afterward, and we're still asking him questions and he's talking, and the guy behind him and his son, his very young son, you know, they obviously recognize him and start talking to him. And he just stops, totally stops his meal to turn around and talk to them and spend, you know, probably 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes devoting attention just to this father and his very young son.
Yeah, yeah. Even the first, you know, our first introduction to Dimas was we were meeting him and the translator at a cafe to get some coffee prior to going to the gym. And even there, not only, you know, did I think he paid for our coffees, number one, And number two, you know, while we were there, there were two people that came up and shook his hand. And, you know, I don't know what they said, but it looked like some form of congratulatory, you know, sort of expression that they were, you know, giving him.
Yeah.
But really just, and again, he was just all smiles and just happy to be there and always really taking the time out of his day to acknowledge the thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Rich, it's nice to meet somebody who is better than your expectations, more genuine, kinder, more forthcoming with his history, and more accommodating than you could have ever imagined.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how about you? I mean, any other things that really stuck out to you, Dr. Bhaffa?
So there, I've been going through the footage and trying to take notes on it to put it into some sort of reasonable order. I mean, we're not going to release the entire interview, I don't think, but to try to get like an hour and a half or a 2 hour cut. Mm-hmm. And every time I go through it, I find other things that I think are really fascinating. The other day, I was looking at some of the footage from the second day where we were overlooking the sea, and he's talking about his experience with the Greek Dream Team and the fact that these were guys like Kakishvili and Leonidas and Yakovu, the coach. And he still gets together with them regularly. I think he said they shoot for every year. They go to one of their training camp hotels to just get together reminisce about their experiences and maintain a bond. And, you know, very few of us are Olympians. Fewer still are multiple time Olympians, but all of us have experiences with people, and most of us are pretty bad at keeping contacts going over the years. And the fact that Dimas is still interested in maintaining friendships and relationships with the people who were on top of the weightlifting world with him for many years speaks again to the type of person he is.
Yeah. He really told some great stories about when they do get together. They're joking around and having a blast together. Which, you know, some of the best relationships that I've ever made are the relationships that have been associated with weightlifters and weightlifting. And I would imagine, you know, they're the same way to a whole nother level, because
oh, it must have been amazing. Yeah,
you are what the world looks up to you in the entire sport, and then to have that sort of group of elites, that's got to feel pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, and they spent years living together, training together. I mean, they were in training camps several times a year, I believe they said, all across Greece in really nice locations, where unfortunately they couldn't really eat anything. And everyone else, Dimas would say, they're having beer and ice cream, and they're there presumably on a not beer and ice cream diet.
But still, I would rather be there on the non-beer and ice cream diet if I'm going to be hanging out with Dimas.
Oh, yeah. Now, speaking of eating, another great story from Dimas. Remember the one about the watermelon?
Yes, I was actually thinking of another one. So you go ahead with the watermelon story.
So the watermelon, at one point we were asking Dimas his best lifts. And I think it was, you know, 190 in the snatch. This is training lifts. 190 in the snatch, 220 clean and jerk, 225
clean.
And then his back squat, I think it was like 320 or so.
Yeah, that sounds
somewhere around there. Maybe a 290 front squat. I have it in the notes somewhere. But he said, oh, but, you know, that's at 92 kilos. And so I was like, well, were you trying to go up? And he said, no. He said, every day I was eating some watermelon, and I just thought it was water. And every day I kept getting heavier. And Yakovu kept saying, Piros, what are you doing? Why do you keep gaining this weight? Are you changing your eating? He said, no, I'm not doing anything different. And then finally, I guess, you know, when he got to like 92, Yakovu was like, something's wrong here, Piros. You got to tell me what's going on. He's like, no, I just eat the normal thing. I eat dinner, and then I have a bunch of watermelon. And at that point, Yakovu, I guess, had to explain, Piros, watermelon is actually all sugar.
All sugar, so, right.
That was the end of watermelon for Piros Dimas, at least at that point. So that was, but that was just a fun story to think of him.
Yeah.
Chowing down on watermelon regularly, unaware of why he's creeping from, you know, 83 or 85, whatever he's training at, up to 92.
Right. The food story I thought you were talking about was his great love of ice cream when he visits Boston.
There are a lot of food stories, to be honest.
Every weightlifter has great food stories.
Exactly. As if the medals aren't enough, this is how you can tell this guy is a lifter to the core. There are probably more food anecdotes than anything else, but go on that one as well.
Yeah, and he has he has children that either are in school or will be in school shortly in the States. So he he comes to Boston specifically quite often. Of course, there's some great Greek person who lives in Boston who owns a number of apartment buildings on Newbury Street, which of course is like the most expensive place to live in all of Boston and perhaps all in all of the Northeast. But of course, whenever Dimas goes, this guy gives him a free place to stay, no matter what. Take whatever building you want. And of course, Dimas, when he stays there, he likes to do something athletic, so he'll go for jogs every once in a while. And even in Boston, as he's jogging around, there'll be people who honk their horns, roll down their windows, and scream Dimas. But another thing that is on Newbury Street is an ice cream place that has Ben and Jerry's ice cream, which is the kryptonite of Dimas.
That's how if you want to bag him at some point, maybe a cage somewhere with some Ben and Jerry. And it was a chocolate flavor, I believe, that was his favorite. I don't recall exactly.
I don't remember either. We'll have to look back, see if that actually came up in the interview, if that was more of a dinner time talk.
I think that was over at the bar.
It was early at the bar, morning. Yeah. That's right. But just some great stories. And it's cool to think of him in Boston, which is, of course, only an hour from me now. So I would love to meet up with Dimas for a couple cups of ice cream at some point.
But that's the hope. That is the hope.
And he has some really, seemingly very, very intelligent kids, both which are planning on attending or are attending quite competitive undergraduate degrees or undergraduate schools. So it's great. It's really great for him.
Yeah, he has a daughter who is at Northwestern, correct?
Yes, Northwestern, yep.
And he has that's his oldest daughter. He has another. He has a son who will be at Yale this coming year. So anybody out there who's at Yale, keep an eye out for Pyrrhos' son, and then another daughter who's still in high school, who's apparently a very good rower. Mm-hmm. And his youngest son is only 7 years old and is in his last year of primary school, apparently. And he was a very proud father. I mean, he's thrilled with his kid's accomplishments, but also, again, just speaks to the kind of person he is. He just wants them to do what they want to do, what makes them happy. And he's supportive of whatever they choose in their lives. So none of them is a weightlifter. His one daughter, the rower, I believe, he said he showed her some lifting movements because he felt like they would help with rowing. But he's really happy to see them thrive in their own areas.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because it sounds like that was somewhat similar with Yurik Vardanian and Norik. It sounds like Norik was never pushed to become a weightlifter. He really had to make that choice and sort of convince his father, say, I think I want to do this. And, it's interesting to see. I think it's important that you allow kids and really anybody for that matter, to choose their own path, because you can't live the life of somebody else or you're just going to, end in bitter disappointment, I think.
Yeah. Now, there were a couple great competition stories as well from the Dimas interviews. And one that sticks out particularly is when he was talking about his performance in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And at the Sydney Games in 2000. And he said when he stood up with, I believe it was 215 kilos in the clean and jerk. And he stands up and he couldn't believe how heavy it felt. He had no air and he felt this is impossible. It's way too heavy. But instantly he says he remembers I've done this 50 or 60 times in my preparation. Since I've done this so many times, I can't miss it now. And so all of a sudden, that was it. He made it. No problem.
You know, when he said that, I said to myself, I wonder if he's exaggerating about the 50 or 60. But then I said to myself, he's probably not exaggerating.
No, yeah, exactly. Well, and their training protocol was really, really something. Yeah. I mean, it was basically just about every single day a week. I think it was 6 days a week. And they were going to 100% a number of times. It was very much, as he admitted, what we would call a Bulgarian-style program. So, yeah. You know, they had a morning session, back squat, snatch, clean and jerk, and front squat. They had lunch, then a snatch, clean and jerk, and front squat session in the afternoon, about 4 p.m., and then dinner. And then immediately after dinner, there was some days you would do snatch, other days you would do clean and jerk, and then back squats. That was the third session. And he said, you know, three sessions a day, every single day, but Monday, Wednesday, Friday was to 100%. Daily max, and then the other days it would be 85% of what you had done the day before.
Yeah, and that's impressive not only for the kind of intensity that they're doing, but for to have not only Dimas to have the longevity of his career, but also Kakashvili, yeah. For instance, who had quite a long career.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Also, so to be able to lift and train in that style and still have the joints left at the end
have
of
anything
day.
Left
right is quite astounding. I mean, it just shows you how much of a freak of nature these guys truly are.
Well, and I think he stressed too that he spent many years in what would be considered a more Russian/Chinese style of training with lots of variation in the exercises, lots of variation in intensity and percentages. And that was the base that allowed him to do this. I mean, he starts at seven and a half years old, he said, with that sort of training. And it's not until he goes to Greece, and I think it was 1990 or 1991, only then does he really switch over to this. And it still, he said, took him a while to transition fully. His body could not initially adjust to that sort of training.
Yeah, it's so interesting because he was, you know, very hesitant to change that when he came to Greece. I think he sort of fought with the coaches quite often for the first year or two until he finally sort of accepted that, you know, that this was what he needed to do to continue his trend upward. But it's interesting. I mean, it's especially for a kid who starts at 7.5 and lifting for 10 years or longer to be doing something a certain way. And then it's such a different mindset to get into training and not working on 80, 85% lifts, but going to those 100% lifts day after day after day.
Yeah.
And it asks for a lot more, both from your, you know, your physicality, but also your mental game has to really be turned on.
You know, I'm just looking through my notes again, and I'm seeing here him talking about transitioning to the Bulgarian, again, what we would call the Bulgarian system. Mm-hmm. And he said, apparently it took him 4 years to get fully adapted, 1991 to 1995. And only then did he feel that it was his system. So anybody who thinks that change is going to happen in a month or 2 months is probably not being realistic.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Well, the whole experience was just mind-blowing, not only for the weightlifting, and obviously we love weightlifting and that sort of thing, but again, just from a human being standpoint.
Yeah.
And when we talk about this, the different training methods and things like that, it's just, this could translate to any other sport, any other expert of any other sport. And, you know, he had to go through some changes, not only when he moved to Greece, but he was in Albania, and I don't think Greeks were looked on very highly by the Albanians at that time. So you're always struggling with your identity as a young person and as a young athlete. And you know, he just prospered throughout it all, and it really shows you something, and makes you think sometimes that you know, a lot of athletes kind of almost have it easy in a lot of ways. You know, there's sort of a very open road that's paved for you. And maybe, you know, that almost makes it more difficult, that you need that inspiration of what's the word, maybe difficulty in your in your personal or in your family life to provide you the motivation to really become something beyond what may seem possible.
Although interestingly, he also mentions how once he is established as an athlete, meets his wife and starts to have a family, how important that familial stability was. And that only later did he really appreciate how important it was that he had somebody who I guess was there for him, stable family life, and didn't have to worry about those things. So an interesting mix of adversity when he was a child and the fact, like you said, he's part of the Greek minority in Albania. They're forbidden to speak Greek outside the home, but they're preserving the culture in the home and then moving to Greece. And that obviously is quite a transition, changing training programs. So yeah, I think a good mix of challenge and adversity, and then making sure to stabilize his life and attend to the details as much as possible, which he also mentioned, to ensure success.
Yeah. And he was a guy who was having children in between winning all these gold medals at the Olympics, you know. So it wasn't like he had his full career and then, you know, got married, had the kid, you know, had kids, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
This was all happening all at the same time, like you had mentioned about when he was married, and I think shortly after that he started to have children. So you know, to think of all that happening in your personal life and still being able to rise to that kind of a level is just outstanding.
Yeah. In fact, only his youngest son was born after his career, 2009, but the rest of them were all born during his weightlifting career.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's amazing.
And we should again say that the group that took us around, that did the translating, that showed us the area, which in the daylight is truly spectacular and really worth checking out if you're interested in going to Greece. They were all amazing. They really, we got lucky that Dimas was so great, and we got doubly lucky that everything on the ground in this area, in the area of Arnaia and the Mount Athos area, was so well handled.
Yeah. Everything from drivers to take us between the mountains and between the small rural communities of goat herders and wood choppers. I mean, all that was organized. I mean, it was quite amazing.
Very traditional area. I mean, Arnaia is, you know, it's not a large town. I think it's 6,000 or so people. And so it feels like a more modern town. But in the area, there are still towns of 500 or so people, I think, where, as you said, there are goat farms, and they still practice very traditional wood cutting and shipping wood to the cities. There's also a special species of pig whose name escapes me, but we had a dish of that pig.
Delicious.
Absolutely extraordinary. Really phenomenal. Cooked in, slow cooked in the clay pot, I believe. Mm-hmm. I am still thinking of that pig. And this was after like seven other rounds of food.
Oh, you know, I just wish there was so much food on that table.
Oh my God.
I wish that I just had that endless stomach where I could just either refrigerate it all for the next year's supply of post-squatting food. it was a wonderful meal.
I've seen what your stomach can handle. Like you were putting a serious dent in that. I think the Greeks might have been a little nervous. if we had had 85 kilo Dr. Westbrook, they might have had to get another pig. As it was, we were covered. We were more than covered. I don't know where all that food went. I hope a village somewhere enjoyed all that food. But 85 kilo Dr. Westbrook.
Well,
might have been a different story.
Interestingly, too, one of the small communities that we went to that was known for their sort of woodcutting skills, we had a guy who was in his, you know, mid to late 20s, who, I mean, this guy had the largest and strongest hands that I have ever seen in my life. And I've shook the hands of guys like Misha and, Klokov. And again, those guys are phenomenally strong. But this, the way this guy, this random Greek citizen on the hills of somewhere near Arnia, the way he shook my hand, my bones are still aching.
It was painful. And he was not that tall. He's probably Pyrrhus's size. I mean, they looked about 5'8", I would say.
Yeah.
And I've never seen mitts like this on somebody. It was astounding. I think somebody has pictures. I hope somebody has pictures somewhere.
I have a few photos of that. I'll have to post those soon. But man, I just thought to myself, somebody get a bar into that guy's hands.
Right.
You know, I mean, this guy has the genetic propensity to be something great.
it'd be like spaghetti or something in his hands.
I know. So that was an interesting interaction there.
It was, and overall, again, it was a really great trip. And now I just hope we can do justice to it all via the footage we have. So you were filming, I was filming, Nat Aram of Hook Group was filming. There is a ton of footage to go through and try to assemble into something coherent.
It's hard too, because of course we're interested in many of the minute details of either lifting or shoes or whatever. So it's
mostly shoes.
Yeah. And of course we did discuss shoes with Diamasa as we should, being the two doctors. Yes. So it's really hard. I mean, even going through the footage that I had, briefly kind of gone through, I want to share it all.
but all of it I think is interesting and worthwhile.
Yeah
Maybe there'll be like a regular cut and then a director's cut,
yes
which is just unedited raw footage,
yeah
just 10 hours or something. I'd watch it.
I would watch it again, and I was there.
As would I. Well, Dr. Westbrook, I think that about covers it. We had planned on a briefer podcast. I'm not sure we were any briefer than normal, perhaps a little bit.
A little bit. We were shooting for about 30 minutes. We're at 46:27, so that's not too
bad. That's
about
par for the course for us.
Yeah, about 50% over.
Yeah, in weightlifting world, 50% over is on time.
Yes, absolutely.
And with any luck, there'll be another podcast very soon, because I believe we are in contact with the one and only Uncle Junior, Uncle JP, and Sean Waxman to throw together a discussion of the upcoming 2016 National Championships / Olympic Trials. So keep your eye out for that.
Yeah, and I believe it's JP's birthday today, perhaps, or was that yesterday? I can't remember. But anyways, happy birthday, JP. It is.
Well, yeah, we'll toss him a happy birthday. I think it was actually like a week ago. But in any event, that's.
Yeah, I don't look on Facebook very often.
Nobody's ever accused us of getting things like dates and facts right. So we're not about to start right now.
We're in the general vicinity. That's what we're shooting for.
Ballpark. So happy birthday month, Uncle JP, Nicoletta. And thank you to everybody for listening and tuning in. If you enjoyed what you heard, give us a rating on iTunes. Even if you didn't enjoy what you heard, give us a rating. Leave us some feedback. If you have ideas or suggestions for future shows or any questions, get in touch with us on Facebook, The Two Doctors. Check out our Twitter, Bafa Westbrook at The Two Doctors, or go to our sporadically updated website, thetwodoctors.net, with the number 2.
Dr. Bafa, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Dr. Westbrook, the pleasure has been all mine. And again, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.